Hello, I'm Frieda Morrison and this is Scots Radio. On behalf of the Scots Radio team, let me wish you a happy new year. Gweid de hea wias. And we set off in our usual style that befits a team that, despite the weather, is destined to bring you joyous mirth and merriment with a tinge of good humour and wisdom. As is our tradition, we will guide you through the real Scotland and beyond to the land of stories with Willie Johnson and David Mitchell. Dave entreats us to Wisdom of the Elders again, having a look at his unsung heroes. And Willie Johnson introduces us to a book about the Battle of Bannockburn, ideal for the new year, the coos days and nechts. And we are delighted to be joined by the chair of Oorvice, Phil Reid. Oorvice is the campaigning organisation for the Scots language, or LEAD. Are this imparted wisdom, information and stories wrapped up in a complete miracle that is devised and driven by our technical wizard, come in, Mr. Richard Werlett. Rick, are you there?
I certainly am. A complete miracle it is indeed, Frieda. Yes.
You are a miracle worker, a wizard. Obviously, you know, I'm sure I'm not good enough to you, because without you, this just wouldn't work at all. You press all the right buttons and the knobs and sliders and nothing.
I just get lucky.
Aye. So, Glesa Sherry, wild and woolly hen parties at Hogmanay, do you think?
Well, do you know, I was actually at work in Frieda. I saw on the bells with the sensational Jimmy Shendrick's Experience Cayley Band up at the Assembly Rooms in Edinburgh.
Wootcha.
What a night. So I've had a few Cayleys over the festive period, but that was the highlight, that one right there. It was absolutely brilliant. So,
well done you.
There you go.
And waiting in the wings, another very special guest, singer, writer and new rector of Aberdeen University, the legend that is Iona Fife. And we'll be speaking to Iona about her incredible career and recent year that culminated in her being appointed rector at Aberdeen. We start as we mean to go on with this track from Man Ran. We are track from their album Urar. This is Crossroads. sheer musical delight. And congratulations to Mandolin and Gary Innes after the huge success with their Hooli in the Hydro. And of course, it's a unique occasion on its own, but made even more special by the National Trust for Scotland lending the very fiddle, Richie, the very fiddle, played by Robert Burns. Actually, I think. A shotty on the special night, a shotty's fiddle.
Wow.
For a great team. But we need to turn to the present again and look into the future. Wimmy Rechnu is the one and only singer, songwriter, broadcaster, campaigner, and now the recently appointed rector of Aberdeen University. Welcome and a happy new year, Iona Fife. Are you there in Glasgow?
I'm here. Happy new year to you, Frieda.
Oh,
thank you very much.
She's there.
You're making me blush.
Oh, and it just announced that you're added to the list 100 of the most influential folk in Scotland. Another congratulations. What a year you're here.
It's an interesting year because I've actually sat back and I thought, came fit in 2025. I'm going to do far less and focus on making some new music and feel better. But then I look back and think, actually, 2024 was a pretty big in awe. Like I was in the States on tour in September and just different things going on with different organisations. And we've really made heed why we your advice, and you'll speak to Phil later about that. And but loads of things going on.
And now, before we speak about your recent appointment at Aberdeen University, I want to just set the scene for folk about just how busy you are. You mentioned about it there. You're maybe one of the busiest musicians and singers in Scotland. And just back, as you said, a very demanding tour of the United States. How far did you travel in that, Iona?
Well, I could either way from San Diego to Vancouver, back to Seattle. And it wasn't just in a straight line. It was up and doing and then doing and up and a wee bit. In 2022, I had a band with me. The climate means that I just had to do this in solo. So it was me, a hire car, a piano that I actually tenured on a flight fae Glasgow, my own wee Nord piano, and an amp that I tenured in my suitcase. Honestly, some of the venues were amazing. Some of them were like wee halls that didn't have PA systems. Some of them were hooses. They had hoose concerts out there. It's seriously an amazing place to travel and tour at. And I was there at a really interesting time, you know, in the run up to the election.
Of course,
and I think we're wanting to hear conversations and understand more about Scotland on the world stage and kind of gee forth and putting for it like America on the world stage because they were needing, like, it was an amazing time to be there. And I've got my O1 visa until 2027, so I'll be going out a wee bit of Mayrina next year.
Aye. Now then, how many concerts roughly did you do in that particular tour, just to give folk an idea of what life is like on the road?
Well, there was only 15 tour dates, and then there was some workshops in between. But because I was doing other driving myself, it was pretty much wake up, have a bite to eat maybe, get in the car, drive for hours on end, sound check, do the gig, maybe get a wee Taco Bell after, and then drive to the next place, find somewhere to stay some days, or stay with a homestay, and then wake up the next day. But in 2022, I was out there for six weeks. It was a long, long time. But it doesn't feel like that when you... A long time.
I mean, you should be getting an award for that alone, just for doing that on your own.
Aye.
Richie, for you mark that, I mean, Phil, that is incredible, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, usually you're away with your bandmates and that, but to do it on your own, I think that's a bit of a mission, and I take my hat off to you. That's absolutely brilliant, Iona. Yeah, good job.
My mother wasn't so pleased. I did this last year and I drove from Chicago to New York City to Boston to Washington, D.C. On my own with this wee hired car. It was amazing, but it just shows the strength that you've got. I mean, the unfortunate thing is things like emails and correspondence falls by the wayside because you can't be doing your emails and driving at the same time. But the gigs that you do and the folk that you meet, it is amazing. And nobody worries about language or Scots. They just think, oh, wow, it's a different language. And right. I get a lot of questions about the difference between Gaelic or Gaelic and Scots. And that's good because they'll leave a concert kind of a wee bit more about it than they did when they went to the concert.
Mm-hmm. Who do you explain the difference between Gaelic and Scots? I've tried to do it a few times.
Well, if I've got maybe 30 seconds with them at a CD stand, I'll say, well, you know, Gaelic is Celtic and, you know, it's shared with Gaelic and there's a mutual intelligibility with Manx Gaelic and all. It's kind of that Celtic language, and Scots is really West Germanic, mutual, you know, sisters to English. And then I would maybe say 1 to 12 in Scots. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'd give them examples like the word for songwriter, sangskriver, that's the same in Danish, grun, sma, hus, bra, all of the kind of words that kind of encapsulate Scots or Doric in a kind of European context, and that's when the light bulb goes on for folk.
Now, I'm going to bring in Phil Reed here. At the same time, keeping your finger on the pulse of politics, you're doing Arthur's touring, and you're on the committee of Oorvice that we're going to hear about mair about in a minute to be the chairman, Phil Reed. Fand if you took up your post as rector at Aberdeen University?
Bang on New Year's Day, nae rest for the wicked.
And did you get officially robed at a special ceremony?
I think sometime in March or some sort of inauguration fair, they put you up on a bull in the Merchurion campus and you can invite all your friends and family to watch. I'm kind of dreading that because, I mean, in, you know, January 28th, that'll be the first surgery that I had, and I'll ging up and I'll speak to the students, and then what'll happen is on a issues that they hae, that is, you know, confident business, we would tack it to the court, which happens in February. And I'll hate to join online because I'm in Canada doing a few gigs at that point. So it's just about kind of balancing doing the role and being a musician. Because historically, I mean, you've got folk like, goodness me, Winston Churchill, I'd duck in if he was in Parliament at the time. Or you've got Maggie Chapman if I was in Parliament at the time. And she certainly gied a lot of her time.
It's a huge responsibility. Now, what's your first platform for change, if change is needed?
Well, I'm not sure if you're aware, but the halls up at Hill Head are actually controlled by the uni, as opposed to an external kind of organisation or development. And right now, a good thing that the uni's doing is that if you are for specific postcodes, you know, underprivileged postcodes, you can apply to hae your first year of accommodation covered by the university. So that is reducing hardship on bairns fae, you know, maybe a low-income background, which is what I was. Mm-hmm. I'm hopefully going to, you know, campaign to the head of estates to maybe extend that on a means-tested basis for students in their second, third or fourth years. Because the hardship doesn't just end at the end of first year, does it?
No.
So that's my first thing that I'd really love to get done.
Good for you. Aye. Good for you. I love to hear that. Another congratulations on your appointment for your honours. And just as I mentioned honour, Iona, we are joined by the chair of Oorvice, Phil Reed. Phil, happy new year to you. Reeking lums and nothing.
Happy New Year to you, Frieda.
It's fine to hear you at last in Richie's studio.
Aye.
And I just hope he's looking after you.
Oh, it's awful fine to be here, aye.
Now, explain Oorvice to them that doesn't ken.
Oh, Oorvice. So we're a voluntary organisation. We've had our 5-year anniversary this year. So I wasn't there at the start, but Iona, she's been there right for the first meeting, I think, Iona, is that right?
Well, the first meeting was actually in a pub, and I wasn't there, but technically, we've kind of folk just dribbled in, kind of like.
Aye, so we've kind of evolved a wee bit over the past five years. So I maybe came in maybe at the end of the first year, and then slowly wheedled my way up to the top. But we're a civic organisation for all walks of life. So we've got folk like Iona, singers, poets, academics. Me, myself, I'm just a passionate Scots speaker for the Northeast and all, as you'll hear from my voice. But I've been doing in Edinburgh for a good while now. As well as the committee, about 10 of us, we've got about 370 members and all out there that we try and keep involved throughout the year. So a lot of our activity has been online this past year. It's been centered around the Scottish Languages Bill. We came together in our first sort of major kind of wee mini conferences here and all. So over this coming year, we hope to do a bit more of that.
Right. Now, as you said, you you and Iona were involved in the recent gathering at the Storytelling Centre in Edinburgh, set up by Overvice to focus, as you said, on the next steps needed to not only promote the Scots language, but Mulwer fit you would like to commutle the Scottish Languages Bill that's gone through Parliament anew. So, Phil, fit were your main points that commute the day?
Out of the day, so we kind of designed the day to be a bit of a mix. So the key thing is we wanted to make sure there was outputs for sessions that we could feed into Scottish Government. So this is right for the moo or the community, these pints here. But being that way, we wanted to make sure it was a opportunity for folk to come together, Scots speakers, for all walks of life, and learners and that and all, to network and make broader connections across the community, because we kind of felt that with science maybe a wee bit of lacking. So there's a lot of good work goes on out here, but no money things that brings different groups of folk together. So that was a key objective of the day. For the workshops themselves, that was kind of wee workshops designed around sort of things like addressing the concerns of the community, topics around about broadcasting, just for folk, the hopes and aspirations that folk have that they would like to see government deliver over the coming years, really.
Was there any mention of creating a formal body, Phil?
Aye, very much so. So I kind of missed that bit out of what Overvice is about. So, I mean, we're a campaigning organisation, and the initial focus was around getting legal status for Scots, and through that the formation of a body. So not necessarily on the same lines as Bursh na Gaelic, but certainly either a language board or language commission, or that's something that I felt passionately about. Interestingly, that came out really strongly for the workshop sessions, that across the community folk do feel that there is a need for a statutory body in there that drives for it a language policy, and that body should be representative of our broad community of Scots speakers.
Iona, before you go, I kind of need to gang a wash sharpish because you're a busy quine. You were chairing a discussion panel at the event. What did you come away thinking about? Was there a main consensus of opinion, you think?
I was chairing a panel called Scots in the Airts, and we had Taylor Dyson from Dundee that runs a theatre company. We had Emma Gray, an author from Clydebank, new based in London, that does translations and young adult fiction. We also had Alan Bett from Creative Scotland, and we had Ali Heather on the panel and all.
Right.
And it was really kind of a damning indictment of the state that, you know, our culture sector is sometimes in when it comes to the drib drabs and cash flow of who things are funded, and you can about that yourself. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of about wise to appreciate Scots in different contexts, and that there was a lot of ideas about, like, Well, actually, there was a lot of good things that were already happening that folk were bringing up as examples. So there wasn't much kind of scope for, okay, well, this is what we do next. But it's more about, like, building on what's already there, the commissionings that BBC Scotland are making, the idea that music is appreciated out of the world, and that there's this translations, a really well-known kind of Bairns books that are getting into Scots. It was a really positive panel, but the whole day was really positive, and Phil and the team put a huge amount of effort to put it all together. I mean, I'll recuse myself. I was half a busy at a time, so I couldn't contribute as much as I'd like to. But the whole day kind of got folk not on side, but, like, it kind of consolidated questions and ideas and opinions or preconceptions that folk had about the Scottish Languages Bill that, you know, has just opened for its amendments, well, last December. So hopefully we'll be seeing that happening. But this idea of a body that you're speaking of, that was floated a few times. Something, a tangible thing that can come from the Act, and it's not just box ticking or, you know, a futile piece of legislation.
I think that's what a lot of what fear makes the world, that I've heard a lot of what mentioned that it's going to be a box ticking process. And I've got tremendous faith in Aberdeen getting together, Nathan, to let that happen. Phil, what would you like to come out to it? your plans for 2025?
A clear plan for the why for it. I mean, there's no doubt there's disappointment across our community and the Gaelic speaking community around the low levels of funding. So it's not really going to be game changing for that perspective, but it is going to put a framework in place that we can drive things for it. And what I've been speaking to civil servants about is like the importance of having a roadmap that looks at the short, medium and long term. So I think we are probably kind of realistic at a body perspective, like a statutory body. We're kind of maybe looking at the longer, medium term, certainly into the longer, medium term. But what we should be doing new is marking a clear why for it that we can see who we're going to get here. And that's what I in our vice would expect to see in the early days of the strategy, to make it clear that there is a way to get there. It's maybe not going to happen in 2025, but let's start laying the groundwork to get here.
Mm-hmm. And did broadcasting come into any plan or other, or any discussions?
It was definitely in any of the workshops that Tom and I think Jack ran was looking specifically at that. And Iona will say a wee bit as well. You know, the key things is it's just getting Scots voices in there in an authentic way, and they just speaking Scots folk speaking about Scots. Just let's normalise it, and it can be dramas tucking in Ilkay Day kind of speakers, could be documentaries about other things, but we can hear them in Scots and all. Let's just normalise it, and they just hear Scots and sort of comedy shows and that, although it's great and that, but it can't just be about that or koofy type things. It needs to be an Ilkay Day types of things.
Present day Scotland. Yeah. Well, I'm just congratulating Richie.
Oh.
He's put up with me for 11 years on Scots Radio. We're actually celebrating 11 years this month of Scots Radio. And it's exactly what we're trying to do over the 11 years, just normalising what we're speaking about.
Aye.
We're going from different subject to different subject in the Scotland New, and we're no fear to tackle on a subject, basically. I kind of think on a subject we haven't tackled, Richie.
Oh, I can, but I bet you'll find something. We're good at that.
And the Kenners, there's so much material out there that could be put into a really great magazine programme, like they have in Ulster Scots and BBC Ulster. I was on BBC Ulster last year, twice, speaking to them in a programme they call Country. And it's just a magazine programme every week. And they admitted that almost Scots Radio is identical to what they're producing. So why we can't hear that in Scotland, we didn't ken. But we keep trying, folks. Okay. We keep asking and we keep going. And it's folk like you and Phil and Richie that make things happen. So thank you to you for coming in. And Richie,
aye,
congratulations for putting up with me for 11 years.
I wouldn't have it any other way, Frieda.
It's been a fair tag on, I can tell you. We were hit by lightning one of the years, Iona.
Oh, that was fun.
That was fun. Clear place.
Well, congratulations to Abdi.
We won the Celtic Media Festival outright in 2021. We were up against BBC Channels, our place, and it was a great year for us that year.
Aye.
But we've been nominated 7 times, Richie, in the Celtic Media Festival for an award.
Aye. Oh,
so we're doing something right. We're doing something right. We'll just puddle away and just see if it comes out.
Keep banging the drum. Come on.
Well, it's been a pleasure hearing you on the programme, Iona. And didn't I forget to come back and heist you back. Well, best wishes for the coming year.
Thank you.
And I think it's just been a pleasure to hear you on the programme.
Thank you.
So fit your next tack on? Fit your next big job?
Finally making new music. I'm doing things here and there and, you know, trying to get new ideas out there, wee translations of Christmas songs I knew just to, you know, keep spirits up. But finally getting that album, a ballads, a James Madison Carpenter stuff up that the Doric Board kindly offered some support for.
Yep, I know about that.
It's all there. Just trying to get musicians in a room to record that is near impossible. They're amazing and they're so talented and they're peers that I get to conservatoire with. That album's got really, really broad Northeast songs in it, like Battle of Harlaw, and really just things that were collected for Belle Duncan, and just, you know, super, super ballads that I haven't actually seen before, and ones that I wanted today. So getting that charted up, getting that recorded, huge, huge undertaking, but kind of ready today. I mean, I've spoken publicly about this before, but fibromyalgia and being a musician is really, really difficult, because it means that you hate to grasp on a moment that you're up and feeling good and do something with it. And it's definitely something that folk didn't speak about enough, because there's a bit of prejudice around it. But that's what I'm trying to do. I'm going to Montreal for a conference in February for folk music, and I've got some gigs out there in Canada, which will be exciting. A Celtic Connection show in Glasgow on the 22nd of January. So lots of opportunities to perform this new material, but just getting it done and recorded, all the thought. But yeah, we'll get there.
I can report to the Doric board that you're on the case then, Ireland. I'm really delighted to hear that.
On a case, just getting it all screeved up for the musicians.
Great. Aye. I love to hear that. And, Ione, as I said, dinna forget to come back. And our best wishes for the forthcoming year. Bye, the new.
Bye.
And, Phil, you can't escape because you're in the studio.
Richie's got my locked in the press.
But
at
you
the
noticed.
Back.
Oh, no.
Bide with us, and Richie will try and be good to you, since you're a Dufton loon. We didn't find money for that Elk and Richie studio, Dufton for
Dufton, brilliant. It's usually just the wee splash in the bottle that comes
the whiskey,
from my place.
I didn't tap on your wee man
the
day.
Whiskey, lad, it's whiskey, aye. The Cabrick, mind we were up in the Cabrick distillery near that long ago, Richie.
That was amazing.
It's amazing what they've done there. I hadn't been, but I follow them on social media.
Phil, you'll need to hear a visit to that weekend. And it's just a delight to see if it's happening and all the work they're doing up there. Right, time for mere music, and fit better to hear than the voice, the singer, the new rector of Aberdeen University. This is Ione Fife with the Guys at Tuch.
I get up to Afford for to get a fee. I fell in with Jimmy Brun, me him a dead agree. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day. I come a diddle, come a dandy, oh. I fell in with Jimmy Brun in the year 91. To gang him and cause second paid and be his own man. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day. I come a diddle, come a dandy. Him to gaze at took twas on an evening clear, and in a boot the or a hoose the gaffer did appear. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day, high, come a diddle, come a dandy, oh. I'm the maester o' the place, and that's the mistress there. You'll get plenty cheese and plenty bread and plenty mare to spare. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day, high, come a diddle, come a dandy, oh. Well, I sat and ate the cheese and bread till they did doon me stare, and then I thought that it was time to gang and see my fear. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day, high, come a diddle, come a dandy, oh. When I get to the stable, my pity 40 view, oh, fex they were a dandy pair of chestnut and a blue. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day, high, come a diddle, come a dandy. The blue, but long, long our lives in time, my pity got me blue. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day, high, come a diddle, come a dandy, oh. The two she was na working wheel, she went na throw the far. The gaffer says I better yen at this midi take and far. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day, high, come a diddle, come a dandy, oh. When I got him the new poo, she pleased me uncle wheel. I thought she would be better again, she had a cotton wheel. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day, high, come a diddle, come a dandy, oh. I rocked awa a month or twa wi uncle little clatter, till I played up some nasty tricks and broke a daddy jugger. Come a high, come a do, diddly doon. If I did the like again, he'd pit me frae the toon. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day. Hi, come a diddle, come a dandy, oh. We hear gallant Bailey, I Wallace is his name. He can fare it up the kive, any tax do not came. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day. Hi, come a diddle, come a dandy, oh. We hear a little Bailey, I Jimison's his name. He's gone out to Yafford, far he's raised enough of fame. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day. Come a dandy, oh. He's gone doon to Charlie Watts for to he had to rob. Long, long ere I could doon, the laddie could na stand. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day. High, come a diddle, come a dandy, oh. We hear a gallant kitchy lass, I Simpson is her name. For to tell her pedigree, I really would think shame. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day. Diddle, come a dandy, oh. She dresses up on Sunday, we had heat up off the level. Teeth that, oh, the ivy that would scare the very devil. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day. High, come a diddle, come a dandy, oh. Now my song is ended, I won't sing any more. If any be offended, ye can walk outside the door. Come a high, come a do, a high, come day. Come a dandy, oh, come a high, come a do, a high, come day.
That was the Geyser Tooth. Singer was Iona Fife, and it was grand to hear Iona on the programme with us. Now, you're listening to Scots Radio, our special New Year programme. I'm Frieda Morrison, and a happy New Year if you've just joined us. Now, I need to introduce Fars Weas, this part of the programme, our regular team members. We've got the chair of Oor Vice in Richie's studio in Embra, Phil Reid. Phil, you're okay, you're still there.
Am I here?
You're surviving. Okay, fine, yeah. And a past curator of the Edinburgh Botanics, vice chair of the National Trust for Scotland, come in, Mr. David Mitchell. Happy New Year, Dave!
Happy New Year, Frieda. Happy New Year to you.
Okay, tell us what your focus is in this episode.
Well, we're going to do a wee bit of more about Andrew Lang, but we want to find out more about the man himself, because he's no a real Kent face. And then we're also going to talk about another less Kent fella, Donald Watson, for I used to bide in Galloway, my haymaird.
Oh, good for you. And sitting in his ain nook in Dumfries or thereabouts, come in, Willie Johnson. Willie, are you there?
I'm here, Frieda, yes. Happy New Year to you, and Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
And fit your book, this programme.
Well, the book this month is another one for Scottish history buffs, and it purports to offer a fresh perspective on the Battle of Bannockburn. Now, you might be wondering what can be fresh about Bannockburn 9 centuries on, but I'll explain shortly.
Lovely. Now, speaking of Ahoolies earlier on, I congratulated Gary Innes and Manran for another huge success, a concert in Glasgow Hydro recently. And in that concert, Hoolie and Hydro, there was a special tribute to band leader and legend, the late Fergie MacDonald, King of the Button Box. This is Fergie with a set of tunes in perfect timing for a Highland Scottish. Tuck your partners! Here's Fergie.
We'll be right back.
Fergie MacDonald with tunes to set your tootsies tapping, just grand. Now, Willie Johnson has been introducing us to a great lineup of authors he met at the Wigton Book Festival. And we have the next on the series that will offer another idea for reading in a wild and windy night or day. Willie, over to you.
As I said earlier, Frieda, the next book is about Bannockburn. Its title is 1314, The Year of Bannockburn, and that offers a bit of a clue about what makes it different from other books on the subject. This one looks at events in a much wider context than most books, starting 6 months or so before the battle and continuing 6 months after. The author, Dr. Callum Watson, couldn't really have been much better placed to write it. He works for the National Trust for Scotland at the Battle of Bannockburn Visitor Centre, where he gives guided tours of the exhibition and the battlefield itself. I asked Callum about the approach he took to writing the book.
The book is written to address what I think has been a missed opportunity in terms of studying the battle, because there have been plenty of books that have looked at the 2 days, the 23rd and the 24th of June 1314. There have been lots of books that have put the battle in the wider context of, say, Robert I's reign or Edward II's reign or 14th century Scotland. But nobody has really looked at why does the battle happen, where it happens, when it happens. And I think to answer that question, we need to go back to November 1313. That's when Edward II announces that he's setting off into Scotland. This is his second invasion of Scotland. The first time that Edward had invaded in 1310, Robert had stayed out of his way, had refused to offer battle. And I think probably in November 1313, that's what Robert is planning to do again. But in the sort of 6 months or so that take you through to the battle happening, basically there are a series of incidents that are almost out of either of their control. Certainly I don't think within Robert's control, that makes it so that by June he's become determined that actually this is his chance to do something that no King of Scots has ever done before, face and beat the King of England in open battle. And then the other half of the book takes you through how they react, how Edward tries to mitigate that defeat, and how Robert tries to squeeze as much political capital as he can out of the victory that he wins.
Despite it being a famous victory, a famous Scottish victory, you contend that it was a battle that actually, or the type of battle that neither king wanted to fight.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Robert Bruce is a guerrilla leader. For the sort of 7-8 years before the battle, he has made a career out of avoiding these things. And out of sort of wearing the English down, sort of hassling English allies in Scotland into submission when Edward is not there to help them. But in 1314, he finds himself in a position where, from about May, he knows where Edward is going to be at the back end of June. And this gives him a framework suddenly that he can build a battle plan around. So Robert, I think, has about a month where he decides that, yes, he's going to go ahead with it, where he, you know, spends his time planning for what the battle should look like on the big day, and crucially training and disciplining his soldiers so they can do the tricks and tactics that are gonna win them this battle. And for Edward, I don't think Edward really is that interested in the war, never mind the battle. He's kind of inherited this from his father, Edward I, but it's in the nature of the type of war and the claims that the English have made about what the Scottish kingdom has been, what the status of Scotland is, or is going to be going forward, that he kind of can't give up on this now. You know, the English have staked the reputation, the prestige and majesty of the English crown on being able to say, no, this is not the kingdom of Scotland, this is the land of Scotland. And Edward just can't back down from that. And sooner or later, he's going to have to try and prove that out on the battlefield.
Apart from now being an author, the day job is on Bannockburn Battlefield and the visitor centre there. What do people get when they come to see you at Bannockburn?
Yeah, so the visitor centre, it's only a mere 10 years old. The sort of main attraction is quite a high-tech visitor experience. So a sort of hour-long tour through our exhibition space that takes you very quickly through the 18 years that lead you up to battle. talk you through the battle on a map of the area as it would have looked in 1314. We place you in an exhibition space with images from the battle projected all around you. There's arms and armor to interact with, information on sources, you know, how do we know what we know about the battle, information on some of the people who were present, and in particular how diverse the two armies were in terms of the sort of identities of people in there. In theory, we break them up into the English on one side and the Scots on the other side, but you will find Scots on the English side. You'll find folks with an awful lot of English connections on the Scottish side. And then we wrap everything up with a bit of information on what the significance and legacy of the battle is.
That was Callum Watson on his book 1314, The Year of Bannockburn. It's published by Pen and Sword Books and will set you back £20.
Oh, thank you, Willie. Fantastic hidden gem of stories there. Now, January is an awful busy month. We've got the Celtic Connections Festival, up Hellier, flinging fowdy bars and barrels, are we, with the Clavey. And then there's the Burn celebrations, and we've just come out to the BBC MG Alba Tribe Music Awards. And again, congratulations to all the nominations and winners. This is Sheena Wellington, There Was a Lad, by Robert Burns.
There was a lad was born in Kyle, but whatna day or whatna style, I doubt it's hardly worth a while to be so nice with Robin. Robin was a roving boy, ranting, roving, ranting, roving. Robin was a roving boy, ranting, roving, Robin. For monarchs and mystere bodies was 25 days begun. 'Twas then a blast o' January wind blew Hansel in on Robin. Robin was a roving boy, ranting, roving, ranting, roving. Robin was a roving gossip keeked in his loof, 'cause she wallows will see the proof. This wally boy will be nae coof, I think will ca' him Robin. Robin was a roving boy, ranting, roving, ranting, roving. Robin was a roving boy, ranting, roving, roving. He'll hame his fortunes great and small, but I've a heart I've been the maw. He'll be a credit to us all, will I be proud o' Robin. Robin was a roving boy, ranting, roving, ranting, roving. Robin was a roving boy, ranting, roving, Robin. A share is 3 times 3 mark 9, I see by every score and line, this lad will deal. Beulgar, the bonnie lassies lie a spar, but 20 faults your man he war, so blessings on ye, Robin. Robin was our roving boy, rant and roving, rant and roving. Robin was our roving boy, rant and roving, Robin.
She's lovely. Gina Wellington, There Was a Lad by Robert Burns. Now, Phil, are you going to any special events, burn suppers, fiery flingings or anything?
Well, no burn suppers as such. I'm going to whiskey tasting at Celtic Connections, which I'm quite looking forward to. But at the end of January, we're Vice are coming together, Bohan Hunajan, to the Scots together. We do tell Key or Runa Boot Burns time. For we have Scots and Gaelic acts together. And then we've got a compere, usually me, doing the Scots bit, and then we've Gaelic compere and all, so it's a rare wee nicht that mixes the twa leads together, and sign them off a fondo myself, so I'm looking forward to that.
Fantastic idea, Phil. Mm-hmm. Sounds really lovely. Richie, what about you? Anything planned?
Aye, well, I'm hoping to pick up a gig with my pal Sandy Breehan and his Cayley band, because you see, he does a really rare address to the haggis, and I quite enjoy it. However, if that's still forthcoming, I think what's more likely is I'll have a rare night in, a big feast with my girls, and we'll have some recitations and a wee dance in the hoose. How does that sound?
A wee dance in the hoose. Families, I love that. Now, Dave Mitchell is a lad of pairs, mair pairs than anybody I ken. In this episode, he leads us into the land of the forgotten heroes, twa in particular. The first in being Dave Fittesy.
Well, we're going to get back to here looking at Andrew Lang. You can, that man was a polymath. The more you find out about him. We spoke about him in the Christmas programme in the Gold of Fairleigh Lee, but you can, I want to find out more about the man himself. He was born in Selkirk in 1844, and he was as sharp as a tack for he was a bairn, because he was gifted. He had a love of literature and words for an early age. His education was at Selkirk Grammar School. And he must have been off a bright, because he went to Loreto and then he went to Edinburgh Academy. No content with that, he went on to University of St Andrews and then Balliol College, Oxford. Mm. I mean, he became an honorary fellow at Merton College. And then,
Now, going back a wee bit, you mentioned the fairy books there. Far did he tack the stories or the fairy books? Did he hate anybody to help him with that mammoth task?
Well, he did feel that it was a queer kind of business, because the stories themselves, they came from across Britain and Europe, Scandinavia, even as far afield as the Mediterranean and Egypt and Africa, and what we would call the Middle East. But he used the works of other European authors, people like the Baroness Madame d'Aulnay, who published a collection of fairy tales in French in 1697, and Charles Perrault, who wrote the tales of Mother Goose, and it was published in 1697, around then and all. And it had classics in it, like Little Red Riding Hood and Puss in Boots and Sleeping Beauty and Bluebeard. And he also looked at the works of the Brothers Grimm for Germany. So he referenced all these works in other languages, but he didn't do it all himself. Another forgotten hero in the middle of this is Lang's wife, Leonora Blanche Aline. She was a skilled writer and a translator. She was able to translate for a whole list of languages, French, Portuguese, Italian, Spanish, even Catalan, you know, German too. And then there were two other wifies that gave him a hand, a novelist and poets. They were May Kendall and Isabel Violet Hunt. So there was, you know, there was quite a team of people behind this. He didn't just do it all himself. I think he was maybe an editor of the whole thing. He took the overview and got other folk going with it.
But do you think he enjoyed the fame that they brought him, or were they something that he just overshadowed his life into their works, kind of thing?
I think that's a good question, Frida, because I think they maybe defined him more than he would have wanted, because a lot of folk identify him with the fairy tales, but there was another whole side to him. His poetry is almost virtually forgotten today, and there's quite a lot of it. He was a classical scholar. He worked on Homer's The Iliad, The Odyssey, The Politics of Aristotle. He also wrote a lot on Scottish history. Mary Stuart, James VI, John Knox. He even wrote about the Romans in Scotland, you know. So I think he struggled with that a little bit, you know.
So what other aspects of his life and legacy that you would want to share with just now?
Well, he had a reputation for being a wee bit of crotchety.
Ill-natured.
I'm not sure that that's fair, actually, because other folks say he was a man of jovial intelligence and banter and manner, but he was short-sighted and he wore a monocle, and I think that maybe gave him a kind of crotchety look, you could say. But what we do know is that he helped a lot of other folk, and he promoted the work of other folk. He was very, very keen on that. I mean, there was a Gaelic scholar called Robert Kirk, 1644 to 1692, and he lived in Aberfoyle, and he published one of the first translations, or he helped with the translation of the Bible and the Psalms into Gaelic. But he had a wonderful collection of Highland folklore called The Secret Commonwealth of Elves, Fauns and Fairies. It was Lang that set about taking that work and promoting it and getting it published. He wrote a beautiful introduction to it. He dedicated his introduction to Robert Louis Stevenson. He also took the work of Alexander Mackenzie's Prophecies of the Barn Seer and wrote an introduction for that. So he was good at pushing other people. He had many, many dimensions. I mean, he was author, as I said, literary critic, that was how he earned his living, travel writer, collector of cultural beliefs. He had a big network. Oh, man, he had a I mean, he was friends with Henry Rydger Haggard. He was chummy with Arthur Conan Doyle, again, Sherlock Holmes, J.M. Barrie. There's another critic who worked in Fleet Street at the same time as Lang, and he said, no other such combination of poet, scholar and journalist has ever been known on Fleet Street. He even supported Rudyard Kipling, because Kipling's mother was a MacDonald of Scottish descent.
Wow.
And, Kipling's a bit of a controversial figure nowadays, because he's associated with colonialism and imperialism, but we mustn't forget he was a beautiful writer and, you know, he was very gifted. He was Britain's first Nobel laureate for literature. And he's a shining example of what Lang's eye for talent, you know. Lang grew people. He grew language. And he made folklore and all the mystery about it more available to other folk. He had this thing that, you know, fairy tales. He loved his fairy tales, although they were challenging for him. But in many ways, imagine a world without fairy tales. There'd be no hope as a bairn. They show you that good things can come out of bad. And that's what New Year's about. A chance for a better start. The possibility for dreams.
Good on you, Dave. Good on you. And I'm just thinking now, unsung heroes. That's your first unsung heroes. What's your next one?
Well, the next one's going to be Donald Watson. Donald Watson was a wildlife artist for Galloway, for my hay mare. That's where he bided.
Well,
tell him more about him in a minute.
Okay, now, unsung heroes. Phil, how's your unsung heroes?
Ken asked Frieda, I've been thinking long and hard about it, and it's quite a hard one to answer, but I'm going to come for the Scots Mick and World, and I'm just going to give a shout out to all the workhorses that are out there doing stuff in Scots, pushing forward the lead. They didn't get mentions elky day. They're just busy doing their own thing. And through the gathering, I met so many of them, and I couldn't pick out one of them. So we all Dean, Abdi out there, pushing forward our bonnie
lead. Good on you, Phil. I really appreciate that.
It's a good call.
Willie, what about you?
Well, Fred, I was thinking about this. Because it's January and because Burns Night is very nearly upon us, my unsung hero is going to be Graham Main. Now, you won't have heard of him probably, but Graham grew up in Dumfries on a tough housing estate, and he didn't get much encouragement when he was at school there. He was pretty much told, he admits himself, he wouldn't make much of himself. But Graham's passion was the arts, and he went away from Dumfries. He garnered experience across the UK and overseas, and then he came back here to try and prove people wrong. So back in 2011, Graham launched the first Big Burn Supper Music, Comedy and Arts Festival, which went on from strength to strength in the years that followed that. At its peak, it attracted dozens of national and international acts every year. The festival is probably fairly loosely themed on buns, I'd have to say, and there's a distinctly saucy and risque side to some of the events. Unfortunately, it suffered quite badly during COVID, with one festival lost completely and the one since not quite back to what they were pre-pandemic. But the Big Bun Supper is still going strong, and it gives us some welcome, entertaining relief from the winter darkness. This year, it'll run from the 17th of January to the 1st of February, with about 40 separate events. There's a spectacular carnival through the streets of Dumfries on the 18th of January, and on Buns Night itself, a host of entertainers led by Eddie Reader and Claire Hastings will perform a live gig, which will also be streamed online for free, so you can join in. So for all of that, and for the Dumfries Community Choir that he also founded, I would say Graham Main is pretty much definitely an unsung hero.
Good on you, Willie. I would say that that's an apt unsung hero. Time for more music and a dance. Tag your partners for a furl or even a barrel. This is for a new album for the Kreinach Kelly Band. Title, Let's Hear Barrel. The tunes are Ali Mac and Jenny's 2-4. Tag your partners. That's for the new album from the Kreinach Kelly Band, and it's a cracker. Highly recommended. Album card, Let's Hear Barrel. And we're barreling into the new year. We another visit to Dave Mitchell's nook to hear about another unsung hero. Dave, what are you telling us about this time?
I want to talk about Donald Watson, Frieda. He's one of Scotland's most important wildlife artists, and I think he deserves to be kent a lot better. He'll be known to ornithologists and folk keen on wildlife, but, you know, he was so skilled. He was born in 1918, died in 2005.
So, Dave, why Donald Watson? St. Mark's him special to you?
Well, although I'm from Galloway, and I even bided for a while, Ken, near where he was, I never got the chance to meet him. But I feel as though I've got to know him, Frieda, since I acquired Yinney's big, wonderful seascapes of Galloway that's got Arctic terns on it. You know, looking at that every day, I kind of feel I've got to know the man. He not only captured the scientific detail of birds, but somehow he could depict the essence of their individual trait. The touch of the breeze on the wing of a tern, the movement of the rippling tide as it scurries across the sand. Sometimes when you look at his works, especially the coastal ones, you can feel the wind. You can almost shut your eyes and you can hear the sea and taste the salt. He was such a skilled observer. I often think about him, what he put on paper as regards paint. He was a bit like Rachel Carson. She wrote a lovely book called The Edge of the Sea. And I think both these people were able to really capture the emotion they felt at the time they were observing. And that's something Watson does particularly well. He's also able to put species alongside each other so that you see them in their ecosystem. He even references the geology a wee bit. But I think most of all, watercolour's a very difficult medium to manage. And, you know, Watson's skies, they're legendary. I mean, he can depict the softness of light, the form, the weight, the translucency of the clouds, the fluidity of water, all the nuances of it. You know, every brushstroke that he used, somehow it was used with a confidence that was rarely seen. He captured sense of place in paint. That's a rare gift.
Forget about his early life and training. Any information on that, Dave?
A wee bit like Lang, he was talented for a bairn. You know, as I said, he was born in 1918. He was actually born in Cranleigh in Surrey. He was the son of a Highland Scot. His father had worked in India and Africa. And his mother, she was an English lady, very determined. And he had a talent for an early age. He copied the illustrations of Archibald Thorburn, the Victorian artist. He was even taken to meet Thorburn as a bairn, and that left a deep impression on him. But his childhood was a wee bit sad. His father died suddenly in 1931 when he was 13 years of age, and his mother, against everybody else's advice, moved back to Edinburgh, and he got into Edinburgh Academy, and that's where he met George Watson, who then the director of RSB Scotland. Watson, like Watson's schoolmaster, A.C. Dodds, and Sir Arthur Duncan, the chairman of the Nature Conservancy, encouraged his interest in nature and art and depiction of birds, but not just painting the bird in its environment. Now, Watson was a bit of a rebel in some ways, you know. He decided he wasn't going to go to art school. He went to Oxford, he got a scholarship, and then he did his war service in India. And he even carried on painting during the war when he was overseas. And there's some lovely works from that time. But his history degree, he set aside in the end, and then he decided that after the war, he just kind of took stock of his life, you know. Mm-hmm. After he came back, you know, he settled in St. Johnstown at Dalry, where he lived for the rest of his life. He wrote, or he provided images for over 30 books, including the Oxford Book of Birds. You know, he was working as a full-time professional artist and author. He was exhibiting in London and Glasgow and Oxford and Dumfries, Toronto, Luxembourg. He became a founding member of the Scottish Society of Wildlife Artists, a founding member of the Scottish Ornithologists Club, and then president of that in the end, and he was bird recorder for Galloway for 30 years, you know.
Mm-hmm. Dave, can I say that he's still very well celebrated in St. Johnstown at Dalry and New Galloway and that whole Glenkens area? A couple of years ago, they actually launched a couple of walks and trails in his honour, and so people can go there and now and do the Donald Watson Walk.
That's right.
Which takes about 2 hours, and there's also a Watson Arts Trail that takes folk around, I think, about 9 sites that were significant to him. So he's remembered well.
I know there was effort, and I think it's still going on, to create some sort of Donald Watson Centre, and I think that would be an amazing thing to achieve, you know. because his four books that he wrote, I have one in my hand just now, A Bird Artist in Scotland. The illustrations, the quality of the illustrations are phenomenal. And that one, A Bird Artist in Scotland, it's got a diary in it about a year in and around St. Johnstown. And, you know, it's just a real insight. Galloway's a hidden gem, and long may it remain so, because I think that's what makes it special. I have a lot of challenges when places become too well known. You then start to see a huge influx of people, and that can have a big impact on nature. He was an important conservationist and scientist. I mean, his book on the hen harrier was all based on a lifetime study of hen harriers in Galloway.
Dave, is there a website that folk can get more information about him?
Well, there are places. There's watsonbirds.org.uk. There you'll find out about his legacy as a nature conservationist and his groundbreaking work on raptors. And he's also, you know, he was quite outspoken about the impact of conifer afforestation. So that website you can go to.
Mm-hmm.
There's also stuff at www.the.scotsoc.org.uk. That's the Scottish Ornithologist Club's website. There's also the Waterston House, which is their headquarters at Aberlady in East Lothian. There's a lovely art gallery there named in his honour. I think the best way that folk can find out more about Donald Watson is to honour his legacy. And as you get into the new year, just tell yourself straight, nae messing, wherever you are, every day you're going to take 5 minutes to look at nature. Nae matter where you are, go outside, have a look at the sky, take a walk along a canal path if you're in the city or in a park. You know, just give nature a hug and she'll give you in back, and your life will be a lot fuller for it. He certainly had a full life, and that came about for nature, without doubt.
Dave, thank you very, very much for that. It's the unsung heroes that we're amongst and you didn't ken about. There are why. And I was just thinking, and I mean this very sincerely, my unsung hero I'm going to propose today is one and none other than our Richie Werner. He has helped folk for years to get music recorded, and he is my unsung hero for 2025.
Oh,
well done, Richie.
That was a bit unexpected.
Well, it's so true, Richie. I mean, you used to tell me you were a digital crocheter, and I said, no. I said, you sort out big holes and all the things we do. You stitch it all together, man. And you're so right, you help so many other people. And I think that's such an important thing. Going into next year, do any good where you can, nobody. Just give folk a hand. Aye. Just mind about the folk that helped you.
Okay, thank you, Dave. This is the McCalmans with an appropriate song to finish. A man's a man for a' that. By, of course, Robert Burns.
Is there for honest poverty that hangs his head for all that? The coward slave, we pass him by, we dare be poor for all that. For all that and all that, our toils obscure and all that. The rank is but the guinea stamp, the man's the gold for all that. But though unhamely fair we dine, we're hard and grey and all that. Give fools their silks and knaves their wine, a man's a man for all that. For all that and all that, their tinsel show and all that, the honest man, though fair say poor, is king of men for all that. Do you see on the peak on a lot, while struts and stairs and all that, though hundreds worship at his word, he's but a fool for all that. For all that and all that, his raven star and all that, the man o'
that man's a man the world o'er. Shall brothers be for all that and all that is coming yet for all that. That man's a man the world o'er. Shall brothers be for all that.
The McCalmans. We are Man's a Man for All That by, of course, Robert Burns. That's a great version. I love that version. And that almost takes us to the I Know This episode. And it's been a busy session. And my thanks to all the folk that have supported us through 2024. And bide with us for another adventure into 2025. Right, row in the room. New Year resolutions. Willie first for cheering.
Resolutions are a bit of a hostage to fortune, are they not? Okay. However, in as much as I've made any, I did lose weight last year, and I'd certainly aim to try to keep it off this year, so that's one of them. And probably as part of that, I'm going to try and keep up and maybe increase my walking regime, with or without my son's dog, which I also get to walk. And that's to try and keep me fit now that I'm officially an OAP. I got my first full state pension payment on Hogmanay.
Yay!
What a way to what a way to see out the old year.
Parties all round, yeah, lovely. Dave, what about you?
Well, it must be the year of the OAPs because I get my first full state pension in March. So I'm going to, I think, as a result of that happening, I'm just going to make sure that I take a day a week for myself to be creative. And I think that's something I'm really looking forward
to. On you.
Nice.
Right, Phil.
Oh, mine's got to be get Mayor Scott Spickers prude about spicking their Scots. There we go.
Good on you.
Nice.
Good on you. Richie?
Well, I think I need to try and be even more heroic, Frieda. I'm going to be as heroic as I possibly can.
Yay!
Actually, on my list, I need to get Mayor albums finished and wee jobs finished. Just get Mayor everything just finished and try and start something new and finish things. And also, I'm going to start putting things back where I found them because I'm not very good at that.
Oh, me too.
Oh, well, neither.
What about you, Frieda? What's your resolution?
Right. Mine last year was learning to cook better.
Aye.
That didn't happen. Really.
Oh,
I'm sorry about that. I got a bitty better, but nay as much as I would have liked. But this year, I've got to stick into my smart pipes. You can, I'm learning the smart pipes, the bellows pipes. And I'm far behind. I'm fan of hen abdi, and they're half a good. So I'm going to the Far North retreats and sometime later on this year. And they're joining a group of folk and just immerse myself in my smart pipes for a few days. So that's my New Year's resolution, and be kind to Abdi on the programme and nae be too bossy. That's my New Year's resolution.
That'll need change.
We have that. We have that, didn't we, Richie?
Nae be too bossy. Nae be silly. You do that, Dave. No, take that bit out. No, Richie, be a tag. No. None of that this year. No. Right, we have a special recording for you to finish. Keeping in the theme of unsung heroes, Jim McIntosh was voted Scots Writer of the Year at the Hands Up for Trans Scots Language Awards in Cumnock in Ayrshire, has written a special piece for us that gings into music for a band that are part of my list of heroes. A band called Silly Wizard. Richie, you'll ken them.
Oh, Silly Wizard. Yes, love a bit of the Wiz.
Silly Wizard. And that band set the foundation for the bands we hear now. So, you ready, lads? For me, Frieda Morrison, Richie Werner, Dave Mitchell, Willie Johnson, and Phil Reid, we raise a glass to the new year. May the wind I be at your back and your tackets never loose. Are you ready, lads? 1, 2, 3.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
This is Jim McIntosh.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and ne'er brought to mind? No, they shouldn't. Nor should we forget the doctors, nurses, and Abdin NHS who care for us. Hodder Hons, Dabber Brews, and ne'er mind the truth of it, are those who sacrificed willingly for us all the way through the COVID burich. Nor should we forget all they folk who kept the lichties on, the water running, the heating on, The shelves stacked for us on 0 hours, rubbish hours. Aiblins, nae hours at a'. Nor the teachers, the folk embracing our bairns' futures, or those biding alane, those on the streets alane, those just wanting Scotland to be their hame. Abdi, just wanting things to be a ticky easier. Nor should we forget a' the musicians, actors, scrivers and makers who try to keep the world spinning with a bonny tune, a laugh and a tear, or a heartfelt verse for us. Nor should we forget those we've sadly lost, should be here now in the warm embrace of friends and family, to toast the licht rising hour of proud nation's horizon. Those we love and will hud forever in our hearts. So should auld acquaintance be forgot? No, they shouldn't. So raise a glass to absent friends, to Abdi no here with us the day, to Abdi deign their wee bitty to make a difference in our lives. And for the sake of auld lang syne, hud for it, and we'll gang together in perfect step into another year.